Hi, you're listening to This Month It's, a podcast about playing games with your friends. My name's Ian Farrell, and every month I get a band of us together to choose a game, then play that game, and then talk about it. This month we chose Hyperlight Drifter, a top-down 2D pixel action RPG that was announced, I think, in 2013 on Kickstarter. So long ago that I expected to play it on the Wii U or the PS Vita. Well, it's 2019, and to my eternal shame, I'd never finished it, so I thought it'd be a really good one to choose as our first game. Cross-platform, available everywhere, and relatively cheap because of its age. You can join in the conversation on our Discord, tinyurl.com/thismonthits, and you can find out more information at thismonthits.com. This is a pilot episode, so I'd love your feedback, good or bad. And without further ado, this is what me and the gang thought of Hyperlight Drifter.
I mean, I listen to a lot of soundtracks. I work from home. Soundtrack Shuffle or something in Spotify. I kept finding myself time and time again looking over to the other monitor and saying, holy crap, this is good. What is this? No joke, it's probably a Hyperlight Drifter song that always stood out to me. Probably give this game a shot. It seems like it's amazing. And thus far, I really enjoy it. I think there's a tone that game sets unlike any other, and it carries through in the game, similar to the music. There's almost like this grand sweeping epicness, yet bleakness to the game. And there's almost a bit of uncertainty in the music and in the game itself, in the narrative. And there's like this black goop that's coming after you. Dark, unclear intro. Yet, at times, there's like beauty in the art that kind of it strikes an interesting balance, right, between bleakness and beauty that few games I think do well, like Hyperlight.
As you're going through, it does a really nice subtle job of sort of fading between different levels of menace in the soundtrack. So you'd be going through a level, and as you get closer and closer to whatever it is that's going to murder you next, they seem to just bring in extra sort of elements into the soundtrack. So you'll kind of start getting a kind of a buzzing distortion kind of thing. And it just does a really good job of setting up that feeling that you're definitely getting close to some horrible, threatening boss before you actually get there.
In game, it also does a very good job of kind of moving with the narrative. So as you come to certain points in the story, they've done an excellent job of making, however the engine is doing it, to switch you, you know, to just give you that sense of peril.
The soundtrack is absolutely incredible. It's the best 2 hours and 19 minutes of soundtrack that I've listened to from a game for an awful long time. It's got all kinds of good stuff in there. That was the takeaway from the game, and it struck me right from the beginning. It is freakishly good. It is freakishly good. And it's got all kinds of little bits in there. Like, there's a bit of this kind of new trend, this music trend of like a chill wave or like this synth wave kind of bit. And then we've got definitely calls to the old Blade Runner soundtrack. That's in there, most certainly. And that is make my hair stand on end just talking about it now, how good that is. It's just a great listen. Like, you can put it on as you're working, and it's not emotive enough to pull you away from the work or whatever you're focusing on, but it's strong enough to be a good listen.
The thing I really like about the pixel art, and it's maybe a bit geeky, but it's actually really pixel art. It's they picked a low resolution, and everything actually lives in that low resolution. So when you've got when you're dashing and you've got like a trail of light behind your eyes or something, that really is drawn out in pixels at low res. And it really annoys me sometimes that people take that pixel aesthetic and then just completely mangle it. So they'll have some things that are in bigger pixels, some in smaller pixels. They'll have some vector graphics over here. They'll have a really detailed font. And there's no illusion that you're playing some kind of amazing game you just never played on the Amiga or something. It really ruins it for me. But everything, as far as I can tell, There might be some little bits of text like you know, don't switch it off while it's loading, but everything else really is proper pixels.
Really, like, it's quite a cute game, and like the heads up display and the not like the tooltippy bits and stuff like that, and like the way that it calls out for you to do like to have an action from your controller or your keyboard. That's really nice. That is a really nice aesthetic that they've picked. It's like lo-fi, like pixel by pixel. It's designed. It's almost been designed. So you look at it and it's like something from, say, the Nostromo, from Mother, and it's almost like that.
The color scheme is beautiful. The different zones changing how things look.
And then it kind of reminds me of what was it, Another World, where they rotoscope the animation. It's just got that thing where you really feel like there's a lot of detail there. You can't quite see it, but you've really got an impression of what's going on. And it's kind of like they're trying to draw a really detailed world with big pixels. So things don't look sort of sort of cute or super deformed or anything. They're just, it's kind of its own little world in there. But I really do like, and the
it has an excellent style. It's just beautiful to look at. The pixel art is really impressive, as is the soundtrack, and I think it all works very well thematically, like all of the mechanics and visual arts work towards that theme of death and destruction. It's dark and it's very preoccupied with death, but I don't think it's pessimistic so much, you know? I kind of equate it to like a Devil May Cry. It's tight controls, but it's pretty demanding and it's easy to make a misstep. I like how each of the areas kind of deals with a different form of violence in society. Like in the north, you have these religious zealots are taking over and slaughtering people at altars, and then in the east, which genocidal war between the cats and the frogs. It kind of stretches the gamut of, you know, very interpersonal relationships with death, and then kind of going into a broader context with it, which I think this game does pretty well, actually, in so few words.
It doesn't, there's no text in there, it doesn't really talk to you. So you've just got to kind of work out what's going as you go along. And a lot of the fun of it for me is just getting completely lost and thinking, oh, hang on, I've been here before because everything's dead, but maybe if I go behind that tree there, there'll be something. And there really often is. I love that kind of just running into a hidden secret area thing.
It's about death without being hopeless. You know, there's a lot of bad dudes and bad stuff, but it's not bleak.
Playing when you're taking damage and feeling the controller pulse and every step is leaving a little pool of blood behind you, it just drives you into the character, and you really feel for that. He's like hunched over and he's bleeding and he's coughing all over the floor. I really felt for him. And when, like I say, when you get to the end and he stabs that sword into the ground, you just want to reach into the screen, give a little high five, and sorry for dying all those times before, but this time we did it.
It reminds me of Half-Life, actually, because you don't so much have the people talking to you, but you do have the just sort of running across a little vignette, and you just sort of think, oh, well, that must have been what happened there, but I'm not quite sure. And they don't really spell it out. They let you kind of imagine what might be going on, because I was listening to one of the videos you put up, and I was thinking, oh, that wasn't my take on how it happened at all, but it does make sense. And I think there must be lots of different interpretations you can put on what you see, and it all kind of works. And I really did enjoy that, actually.
When I was to play games as a child, I was the character. It wasn't me controlling the man. I was the character.
I found I've been quite heavily role-playing it.
Oh, really?
Yeah, so I'm kind of, you know, I've posted videos and stuff where I go, like, I'm some badass future Yojimbo kind of thing. Like, I am playing it like I'm some sort of stupid future ninja.
When you play a lot of games nowadays, because they are the Nathan Drakes and they are the Halos and they are the Destinies, they are faceless characters. For all Nathan Drake, he has enough of a backstory where he is a character. And Halo has a character and Destiny has a character. Because this man was new, it was fresh, it was a little me. And that was exactly how I felt. Playing that game meant that little me was just running around the map and doing my best. And yeah, there was points where I rage quit the game, but it was a game I came back to. And I knew every time when I was being punished, for my own ineptitude. It wasn't because the game was poor or badly balanced. It was because I made a mistake at some point, and it punishes you for that. The game knows that it's difficult. And when you beat that last enemy on the third encounter, and your little chap grabs his sword, he spins it around, he slams it into the deck. It's a little virtual high five. Thank you for getting me through that without dying again.
Every time I play this, there's two games I think of a lot. One is Halo, and the other one is Bruce Lee from on the Atari 800 from back in the day, because it has a similarly pixely look to Bruce Lee. But when you were saying about going to different areas and you're blocked off, that's Halo. You know, you run from kind of trap, or actually gears as well. Because the levels are constructed in a very similar way. You're moving from place to place. Stuff's set up for you to deal with. You figure out the way to deal with it, and then you move on to the next bit.
Oh, yeah, it's unforgiving, but it's a cruel mistress. But they don't go, oh, well, here's a nice little arena with lots of space. The game fights you not only with the enemies, but with the map.
And actually, thinking about it, the way that the drifter that you play as, the way they've got their little character hovering around behind them, it's a bit Zelda, but it's also a little bit Cortana, isn't it? Where you fly around. I like it a lot. I'm really, really into it. I should have played it sooner.
And the combat is, I mean, savage, really. Most certainly, it's not a game of chance, or at least it doesn't feel like it. It's not like, oh, let's just see if I can do this. It's like a bit like Hitman-esque in a way. There's definitely the right microsecond timing and learning how stuff works to be able to make it work out for you.
When I used to play games as a kid, I would go to the market and buy a tape, and you'd get your tape and you'd take it home and you'd put it in, showing my age, and you would play a game, and that was your game for a week. And it didn't matter how hard it was or how easy it was, that was your game. So you put your all into it. Nowadays, it's far too easy just to swap to a new game. So it was really nice to have a difficult game and really have at it. It's utterly punishing and one of the most frustrating games I've played in decades. And it's not normally a game I would have the patience to finish, but it's been really rewarding.
The first time I played through it's so difficult that it's kind of like you're always sort of struggling and slightly sinking and then slightly swimming, and you kind of get through stuff. But then occasionally you'll have a run through a boss or something, and you'll kind of really work out what's going on, and you'll get through it, and you actually won't get hit a million times. And the thing about the super hard mode is if you don't manage the perfect run through, then you don't get through at all. You're just dead and you try again. And you'd think that would make it really frustrating, but actually, I think you kind of just get the hang of you know, having to do it right. So it's kind of like you meet each little kind of boss, and it's kind of like it sort of teaches you exactly what you have to do with it. So for some of them, you have to step back; for some of them, you have to dash back, and you kind of have to do this little dance with each one. And I feel like the second time through playing it on super difficult, I actually kind of finally got it, and I was like, ah, yeah, no, I can get to the point where I can really work out what's going on with that guy. And I think that was quite a surprise that the second time round was really quite different to the first one.
There was a nice thing happened early on, because there's another friend of mine who's asked, he doesn't want to be on the podcast, but he's played along, and he was like, I don't know where to go. And I think that's something that it's been quite nice to share it with other people, because when we all started, there was a little bit of what the...
The way that the game is presented physically and visually in front of you, it doesn't seem to be a game that you would need to make those kinds of choices. Like, where do I go? What do I do? It betrays itself. It's like it has a lot more going for it than it actually shows you. So it caught me off. That definitely caught me off guard. The simplicity, the implied simplicity, and how wrong I was.
It kind of adds something to playing it, but you're thinking, no, I'm really going to kind of like pay attention to this and play it through, because there will be an exam at the end. So. No, genuinely, it definitely added something to it. Yeah.
And it's just a lovely game that was worth all the time I put into it. For a game that doesn't give you any heads up, because there's no text, everything's pictograms, it gives you nothing, and it expects a lot, but it's so rewarding. What you get out of it is so rewarding.
I think I'll come back to it in a little while, and I will realise everybody's comments and triumphs and stories and ideas about the game. It will all come back to me very, very quickly. I can see that there's so much good game there, and it's like finding Faster Than Light a year after it got released and going, oh, I've missed out on a whole year of playing this game. I think it'll be the same thing again. It's got so much quality in that. I will be back.
So that was month one. That was Hyperlight Drifter. But what about month two? I hear you cry. Well, we're picking up Shooter du Jour Apex Legends. Completely the other direction to Hyperlight Drifter, and should be a really nice palate cleanser. Apex Legends came from nowhere into a battle royale marketplace that I think everyone agreed was full with two main players, but they shook it up with something completely different, which, fingers crossed, also paves the way for Valve to bring back Team Fortress in some meaningful way. But I digress. I can't wait to get into it. Don't forget to come find us on the Discord or on the .com, Twitter, Instagram, wherever. Come play with us. Thanks a lot. See you next time.
Oh, we're going to do that. Okay. Okay, I'm up for that. All the cool kids are playing it.